Sego, and welcome to Resistance Radio. No Regan DeLoggins today. She stood in for me last week, and I'm covering for her this week. I got a handful of things to talk about. For one thing, I'll explain why I wasn't here last week. Some new developments, and then some really kind of painful and ugly anniversaries. We're going to talk about that. But I also want to take an opportunity today to do something that I haven't been doing enough of, and that's asking you to go to the pledge line. Go to 516-620-3602, make a donation to WBAI. Do it in the name of the show. I don't ask every week, and I know that I probably should, but you know the deal. I mean, we're listener-supported radio, and if you want programs like Resistance Radio on your radio station or on your airwaves and or online and everywhere else, then you got to support the station. And you can do that by calling the pledge line again, 516-620-3602, or going online. You can go to www.give2, that's G-I-V-E, the number 2, WBAI.org, and you can follow the prompts there to make a donation. And look, you can donate any amount. You can, you know, you can make a large donation. You can make a timed donation. You can become a BAI buddy and do something on a monthly basis. It all helps, and it all supports your listener sponsored radio station. And look, we're part of a network. We're part of a Pacifica network that offers these kinds of programs. You know, sometimes across other stations. You oftentimes hear the news between us and WPFW. I do a show on WPFW as well. It's really important. Look, I hate to drop the Christmas thing because it's not my deal, but it might be yours. I mean, if this is the holiday that you celebrate by giving, then give. And then give to, you know, something that's important to you, that gives something back to you. It gives you programs like this and so many, you know, such a diversity in programming. So give. And I'm going to do one more. Reggie, I know you're there listening. So, I mean, bear with me. It's my birthday in a few days. So give me a birthday present by donating.
Why should I hold anything against you at this point in time? Look, I thought we had an understanding.
Well, this isn't really begging, is it? If I try to use the birthday thing, does that count?
No, it's not begging. No, no, it's you're saying that if it's some type of senseless groveling. No, it isn't. It's necessity.
Yeah, and there's some real sense to this groveling. Look, if you want to wish me a happy birthday, then do so by making a donation to WBAI.
There
How's that?
Go.
Is that good?
There
Is
you
that-
go. Hey, that sounds like a plan there. and also in addition to that, if you appreciate just the off-the-cuff banter that would just happen, another reason why you should give to WBAI.
There you go.
Hey, you know what? Hey, I'm just letting you know.
All right.
Hey.
Tis the season for giving. And look, I'm not asking for birthday presents, only that you donate to WBAI. The present is to do it in the name of this program. Okay, how's that? I'll ask that. If you're going to donate to WBAI in this hour, frankly, any hour, you can always write in or let them know that you're donating in the name of Resistance Radio, normally with John Cain and Regan DeLoggins. And, and I greatly appreciate it. All right, so I am going to talk about some issues that I'm going to remind you throughout the hour, you know, to support this station because it is so critical. And frankly, I'm not going to be here next week, so I don't get a chance to do it next week. By the time I come back, we will essentially, but I think it'll be like New Year's Eve. Is Thursday on is New Year's Eve on a Thursday? I think it is. So that's when we'll be back. So we are going to be essentially ringing in the new year, or at least kicking this one out the door the next time you hear from me. So I am going to press you for support to the radio station. But let me get into a couple of issues. So Cleveland, the Major League Baseball team in Cleveland, dropped its name, and I know you've probably heard this on other programs, but I want to give it my own spin because it's interesting. I mean, the timing is pretty interesting for me because the reason I wasn't here last week is I was out in Cambridge, New York, which is where I graduated from high school. I was meeting, I was on my way. In fact, I listened to Regan's program. Great program. You know, she did a great job on the Brooklyn Pipeline issue. Thank you very much for covering for me. But I was listening to the program, you know, on my way out there. But I went before the school board. Now, back in November, I went to a board meeting in Cambridge as well. But I wasn't on the agenda back in November. This, you know, in fact, in November, I reaffirmed my request to be on the agenda this week. Now, the difference is, when I was there last month, I got to speak for 5 minutes. And for those of you who listen to this program, you know me speaking for 5 minutes is a chore all by itself. So so by being on the agenda, I got a half hour. So I used all 30 minutes and I gave a really detailed and wide-ranging request for them to drop their native mascot. Cambridge is the Cambridge Indians. And, you know, so I went through so much of it. And there's a native family that lives there, a family that I know, that I'm close to, married into that family, as a matter of fact, that supports this. And, you know, and we see this in other communities. And I've talked about, you know, I did a show one week on what do they call it? Called apples, wannabes, and pretendians. And you know, this is oftentimes, you know, people who either want to claim to be native so they can speak on behalf of native people, or they are native people who are always seem to side with, you know, with the non with the opposition, so to speak. And so that's what we have out there. And look, part of the reason that the native family out there supports this is because they feel special out there. There are many places where native people live where we aren't regarded very highly in the communities around us. I'm going to tell you, and without getting into, you know, explanations of overt racism, we get stereotyped as drunks or as living off of casinos and, you know, any range of stereotypes. But if you are native and you live in an area that has no native people around there, you become a bit of a novelty. And that's what exists out there. How do I know this? Because I lived out there. I was a bit of a novelty when I went to school. I graduated from Cambridge in 1978, right near the top of my class. And I enjoyed the town. The mascot meant nothing to me. And it wasn't an issue. I mean, I don't ever remember it being an issue. Look, I played sports. I lettered in four sports. I played baseball and ran track at the same time. That's how you do that. So, I mean, look, I was involved in athletics. I did theater. I was involved in music. I did all kinds of things when I was in school. And I was a pretty proficient student. I scored very high on my SATs. I got a Regent scholarship. I mean, all of that stuff. Like I said, I graduated the eighth in my class, seventh or eighth. I don't know, something like that. So, and I was engaged in the community. And the community was good to me, and I was good to it. But there was that mascot. And as many of you know, because I've talked about this, you know, Shawnee and I have talked about this. We actually both went to schools that had native mascots. And for all the work that we've done and spoken out about things like in Neshaminy with Donna Van Boyle and Lancaster High School out here in Western New York, Delaware, Massachusetts, Connecticut, all these places that we've raised this issue, I had yet to go to my own high school. Well, and that's what I began. And so it was ironic that the day that I ask, so within 3 days of the day that I ask for Cambridge, the Board of Education, to retire its mascot, Cleveland does. And it's the same name. I mean, you know, and of course it's not the same logo. Cleveland had the goofy cartoon one, but in Cambridge, this high school has, you know, the stereotypical, you know, Woodlands Indian, you know, image. But When you get met with resistance, and trust me, I got met with some resistance out there, some really good support as well. So I don't want to make it sound like I, you know, threw myself into a lion's den here. I thought I was, but then it turns out there are people really concerned about social justice in my old town, in my old high school town. So a pleasant surprise and really well spoken, articulate, well informed people also spoke at that school board meeting. But, you know, part of where I want to bring this back around here is I got to talk about the value in having a radio station like WBAI, because of social justice issues. Look, I know many of you who listen to this program and have heard me talk about mascots saying, you know, that's not the biggest issue in front of us. And you're right, it's not the biggest issue. But here's what it is. And actually, as much as it's great to see the Washington football team drop its racial slur or the Cleveland baseball team drop its, you know, goofy, insulting caricature cartoon mascot and the name, my biggest concern, bigger concern, is our high schools. And why is that? Well, because every year they're cranking out students. And these aren't just high schools. These are K through 12 schools, many of them. And they're cranking out kids who are being taught that stereotypes are fine, that appropriating somebody's culture is fine, being able to create an identity that casts us as like relics of the past, these images of the Plains Indian headdress or the Woodland Indian, you know. I mean, basically, if you go online, it's like clip art. You can see all these images that get used over and over and over again by high schools. And kids are being taught that that is what a Redskin is, an Indian is, a warrior is, a Mohawk. I'm the town Millis, Massachusetts, reached out to me. There's a group out there trying to stop them from using the name Mohawks for their team. I mean, on the gym floor, it says Mohawk territory on the gym floor. I said, really? Who knew? I guess I'll go claim some. I mean, this is, you know, so the idea that these white kids, these white schools, because it's not the kids, adults did this stuff. But these non-native schools who ignore the fact that we were displaced from the territory that they built their towns on. And most of them, unlike Millis, who claims to be Mohawks, and I'm not sure how much, you know, that area of Massachusetts was settled by Mohawks. It was, in all likelihood, it was probably more like the Algonquin tribes, the Mohicans or something along those lines. But in Cambridge, for instance, they call themselves the Indians, and they have this, you know, they have the same logo that dozens of other schools use, and that's passed off as Oneida and Seneca and Mohawk and Mohican and Pequot and Huron, all up and down the East Coast. So they don't even identify who the Indians that they claim to be are. And why? Because they don't know and they don't really care. They've grabbed that word and they created an image around it. I mean, 20 years ago, they switched over from the Plains Indian headdress, which they had been for many, many decades, to something that was supposed to be more appropriate or more relatable to the native people that lived there. But they still never defined who they were. But it's interesting, you know, that we can have these discussions. And with a station like WBAI, we are able to educate people and explain, look, I'm not necessarily calling every native mascot racist or every image racist. The Washington football team, yeah, their name was a racial slur. There's no question about it. Cleveland, your logo, yeah, it was racist. When you caricaturize a native people as some goofy, you know, logo, yeah, that's insulting. And it's offensive. And it's racist. But the real racism is the act of using native people for a mascot, for your amusement and entertainment. So you take that and you give nothing back. You know, and I've listened to people, you know, weigh in on comment lines and forums and everything. Well, geez, you take that away and, you know, how am I going to learn about native people now? You think you learned from Chief Wahoo? Really? Give me a freaking break. You know, or any of this stuff. Because even all these schools who do this and grab on a native mascot, they don't go the extra measure and say, you know what? We need to give something back to this subject matter. So we're going to have an extended lesson in our social studies class or our history class, because history is the worst. And why is history the worst? It's because we are treated as a period that came and went. And in fact, they were treated as the period that ended when Columbus washes up on the shore. They say Indians, discovery, colonization, Revolutionary War, and those are the periods of history. I mean, that's what we were all taught as kids. So Indians ends with discovery. And you know, and there are a lot of people who tried like hell to make sure that was the case. So But it's a station like WBAI that allows us to have this conversation and have a longer conversation. Look, I know this subject. You know, this got brought up. The Cleveland baseball team got brought up on other shows. But WBAI gives me an hour. It used to be two, but they give me an hour to, you know, to really expand on the thoughts of this. You know, and this is, you know, December's an interesting month. And I'll get into some anniversaries that are associated with this month that are just terrible. And I've mentioned some of them before. But again, that's the value of WBAI. I get to teach you something that you would never have learned in school. And in fact, you not only would not have learned it, it would be avoided and in some places prohibited from being taught. Why? Because it busts up the whole America, make America great again, narrative. It, you know, that America isn't the greatest country in the world. In fact, they've done some terrible things. And, you know, we're not the only victims of the America. we talk about social justice all the time. But, you know, again, getting back to the issue about whether this is an important issue, it is important. Because as we fight other issues, missing and murdering Indigenous women, social justice issues, pipelines, the Arctic refuge being, being invaded for oil. As we fight these things, we need allies. And our numbers are small. So if we don't have non-Native allies, it's a real uphill battle. I mean, 10,000 people went out to Standing Rock. Most of those people weren't even Native. So we need allies. Well, how do we get allies if generations of children are being taught in school that we don't exist or that we used to exist, and that we've gone extinct? And look, I have had people say that to me. I didn't know there were still Indians, and then I got to explain. Well, we're not really Indians. The word's wrong. It's a mistake. Columbus thought he had reached the East Indies, had not, because he was trying to get to reach the East Indies, which he did not. And so he called the native people of this hemisphere, thinking he was in the same hemisphere, only that there was only one, I guess. I guess there still have to be two hemispheres. But thinking that he was on the outer or the easternmost islands of the East Indies, he called native people Indians or Indio. And it stuck. And 500 years later, we're still being called that. And of course, it doesn't help the governments embed that name and use it and impose it upon us. The Bureau of Indian Affairs, the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act, the Indian Claims Commission. In fact, the names that they list Native people as, Seneca Nation of Indians, all of these names that they've associated, the United Indian Nation, they do this. So they embed that word. We get rid of it, but you keep using it. So anyway, this is part of the challenge, and this is the opportunity that WBAI gives me. And they've been pretty consistent about having some Native programming. And look, I sure appreciate it. And I need you to appreciate it. And I need you to appreciate it, not just when we're in fun drive mode, but when you're listening to the program, I need you to understand that this is resistance radio. And frankly, WBAI is resistance radio. You know, for me, it's a different brand of resistance because our existence, our mere existence, pushing back against the stereotypes, pushing back about what is being taught in school, is resistance. Letting the people know that we're still here, we're still relevant, and we're still fighting many issues. But WBI gives us that platform. So I need you to, again, let me put it out there again. The pledge line is 516-620-3602. That's the number to call, 516-620-3602. Or you can go online to give2wbai.org. That's G-I-V-E, the number two, WBI.org. We need you to support the station. This COVID pandemic is affecting everything, including our bottom lines. We have been creative in how we're managing to do these shows. I haven't been to New York since March. I'm doing my show remotely, and you know, working with Reggie through phone lines, through the internet, through various means of getting this show to you. But we need your support. We need your support to do it. Look, many of us individually have taken on added expense. Even though I'm not traveling to New York, which was pretty expensive all by itself, I've had to buy additional equipment. I've had to do some things so we can do this. So, and I'm not asking you to support me. I'm asking you to support WBAI. I'll figure it out. I do have support back here. Why? Why do I have support back here? I mean, I'm far from New York. Because there are people here who know that being provided a space in one of the largest, you know, media markets on the planet, for us to talk about native issues is important. That's why I have support here back in Seneca territory, because they know what I'm doing is important. I hope you do. You know, if there's one thing for sure, I've missed doing events in New York, because that's my chance to meet you, for you to come out to the, you know, whether we have stuff at the at the cafe in the Brooklyn Commons, or whether, you know, I've done events in other places in the city, it's my chance to not only show a film or talk about a book or bring in another speaker. It's my opportunity to meet you face to face and for us to have more of an exchange. Yeah, we do calls, and I'm hoping we'll do a few calls even today. And that's been difficult. The technology doesn't necessarily support, you know, because of gaps and lags and everything else. It's a little awkward, but I still think it has value. But I need you to support the station and do it in the name of Resistance Radio with John Cain and Regan DeLoggins. Again, the number is 516-620-3602, and you can go online at give2wbai.org. That's G-I-V-E, the number 2wbai.org. I'll bring it up again in the next half of the hour. Okay, so before we wind down here, there is a few things that I want to talk about that's related to history in this month. So a couple of days ago, on the 15th of December, that was the anniversary of the murder of Sitting Bull. And Sitting Bull, there was an attempt to apprehend him. They used tribal police. There was already this kind of, I don't know, this infighting that was happening on Native territories, where some were trying to comply with the states and the federal governments, and, you know, so oftentimes we had these divisions that were being ceded by, you know, by the outside. So Sitting Bull was murdered. Now, Sitting Bull was a fantastic figure, and by fantastic I mean he was blown up in the media. They were covering and they were writing about him, and in many ways they were almost heroizing him to some extent, even as they were casting him as an enemy of the United States. It was one of these strange, almost backhanded compliment, you know, love-hate relationship that America, you know, white folks were having with Native people, especially on the East Coast. On the East Coast, where they didn't actually have to deal too much, because we were already really marginalized in our territories, you know, in those of us who lived, you know, of us Native people who live on the East Coast. But the image of Native people was these vast prairies that the United States was still trying to gobble up, and the resistance of those Native people fighting for, you know, their lives and their livelihoods and that kind of stuff. And it was romanticized. So when Sitting Bull was murdered, there was a guy who was just becoming notable, a guy by the name of L. Frank Baum. And I've talked about L. Frank Baum. He would go on to write The Wonderful Wizard of Oz and be acclaimed as one of America's greatest storytellers. But in 1890, he was the editor of a newspaper called the Saturday Pioneer in Aberdeen, Dakota Territory. He had a strange fascination with Native people, and I'm going to read what is considered one of his two genocide editorials, and it would be written and published on December 20th, which is my birthday. Remember, I'm going to send money into WBAI for my birthday, December 20th of 1890. So let me go ahead and read this. I've done this before on the show, but it's worth hearing it again. It actually relates to the mascot issue, and I'll explain that a little bit. But here it is. Sitting Bull, most renowned Sioux of modern history, is dead. He was not a chief, but without kingly lineage, he arose from a lowly position to the greatest medicine man of his time by virtue of his shrewdness and daring. He was an Indian with a white man's spirit of hatred and revenge for those who had wronged him and his. In his day, he saw his son and his tribe gradually driven from their possessions, forced to give up their hunting grounds, and espouse the hardworking and uncongenial avocations of the whites. And these, his conquerors, were marked in their dealings with his people by selfishness, falsehood, and treachery. What wonder that his wild nature, untamed by years of subjection, should still revolt? What wonder that a fiery rage still burned within his breast and that he should seek every opportunity of obtaining vengeance upon his natural enemies? The proud spirit of the original owners of these vast prairies, inherited through centuries of fierce and bloody wars for the possession, lingered last in the bosom of Sitting Bull. With his fall, the nobility of the redskin is extinguished, and what few are left are a pack of whining cur who lick the hand that smites them. The whites, by law of conquest, by justice of civilization, are masters of the American continent. And the best safety of the frontier settlements will be secured by the total annihilation of the few remaining Indians. Why not annihilation? Their glory is fled, their spirit is broken, their manhood effaced. Better that they die than live the miserable wretches that they are. History would forget these latter despicable beings and speak in later ages of the glory of these grand kings of the forest and plain that Cooper loved to heroism. We cannot honestly regret their extermination, but we at least do justice to the manly characteristics possessed according to their lights and education by the early Redskins of America. So, in his praise of Sitting Bull, he has a different spin on the only good Indian's the dead Indian. His view was, the good Indians were all dead. Not that the only way an Indian was good was if he was dead. I mean, it's the same phrase, but used differently by L. Frank Baum. He called for our extermination because we no longer represented what he thought we should represent. And with the death, the murder of Sitting Bull, as far as he was concerned, that was the last good one worth living, and the rest of us should die. He would also go on, as I said in this thing, to suggest that the conquest of the whites would be able to eliminate us from their memories, and they could recreate, they could adjust how fondly they think of Native people, and they could speak in later ages of the glory of us as grand kings of the forest and plain. That's exactly what the mascot issue is. Reject us as human beings. In fact, eliminate us, exterminate us, annihilate us, erase us from history. And then you can tell your own story about. In fact, you not only can tell your story about us, you can actually claim to be like us. Or in the case of high school mascots, you can actually claim to be, you can be a Cambridge Indian or a Cleveland Indian. So I'll finish a little bit more of the story because it doesn't end here. Because not only does L. Frank Baum call for our annihilation and our extermination in 1890. But he would kind of get his wish because 9 days after this editorial was printed was the massacre at Wounded Knee. Between 300 and 400 Native people would be murdered, assassinated, shot like fish in a barrel. Old men, women, and children. That's the massacre of Wounded Knee, which took place on December 29th. Of 1890. There's other anniversaries, and we'll talk about some of them in the second half of the program. So we'll take a break here. I'll have Reggie spin up some tunes, and we'll take a few phone calls. But I got a little bit more I want to talk about. There's always Mankato, so we'll hit that when we come back. This is John Kane, and this is Resistance Radio. All right, thanks for coming back. That's more Murray Porter, some powerful stuff. I appreciate those who create art in the name of social justice and fighting for a movement. And certainly that is what Murray Porter does. All right. So as I said, though, that 1890 was a really, really bad December. And, you know, and look, although most of what was taking place was happening in that one area of Lakota Territory, we're all impacted by it. I mean, in many ways, this was like the final nail, the final revenge for Little Bighorn and Custer. And, you know, so the vengeance that associated with the United States in the way that it dealt with Native people. Look, I did a whole program the other day where I talked about Teflon Abe. You know, I think it's important also in this time of year to bring up that the largest mass execution in the history of the United States took place the day after Christmas in 1862. And obviously that anniversary is coming up. 30 Dakota were hung in a massive gallows that literally drew crowds of people from the good town of Mankato, Minnesota, to come out and see this historic hanging of 38 men in one fell swoop. That execution was signed by Abraham Lincoln and would take place the day after Christmas in 1862, which would happen to be a week before he would deliver his Emancipation Proclamation. See, they don't tell you about the Mankato thing. They talk about Emancipation Proclamation. Even the Republicans will get up there and brag about, oh, Lincoln was one of them. Yep, he was. So that's, again, part of what WBAI allows me to do, to deliver. Look, I know this is bad news. I mean, look, this stuff isn't pretty. But this is the uncomfortable truth. And a part of being resistance radio is explaining the backstories. Why do we view things the way that we do? Why are we angry? Why are we skeptical, cynical? Yeah, I know. Oh, Joe Biden's going to put Deborah Hallin as the head of Interior Department. Yeah, she's also very a Christian, very military, very Democrat. Don't know that it helps. So am I cynical? Sure I am. Because she has conformed. You remember I told you about that whole Apple wannabe and pretendian thing? Look, it isn't just about insulting somebody, but we get caught up sometimes in the skin, right? When Scalia died, there was a call to, oh, let's put Diane Humatiwa up as the Supreme Court Justice. She's a Republican. And they wanted Obama to nominate her for the Supreme Court. Why? Because she was Native? That's us getting caught up in the color of skin and not looking deeper inside. She is a federal judge. And the first case she heard on Native issues, she ruled with the white people. She ruled against Native people who were trying to stop a highway from going through their territory. Highways, pipelines. And so even when a Native person gets put into these positions, it doesn't guarantee that we're going to get any consideration. Look, you would expect the Interior Department, there's some things that should be obvious. And look, I hope Deborah Hallin does a great job. But look, I'm not crazy about Native people running for office and all of that stuff. I've talked about that stuff before. And part of the whole thing is how many are really prepared to cite this history. I mean, we still have our children being told to stand up and pledge allegiance to a flag. That same flag that was used when they were murdering people in Wounded Knee. That same flag that was flying when they knocked out the floorboards from underneath 38 Dakota in Mankato, Minnesota. That's just the reality. So, yeah, we have a different view on this stuff. But with a station like WBAI, we get a chance to tell you so you understand. Look, I don't want you to have the same emotional response that I might have on this thing, but at least understand. I'm not trying to sell you my perspective. I'm trying to let you know that this perspective exists and why it exists. So that's the value of the station. And that's why I ask you to go to the pledge lines. Go to 516-620-3602. It's the season of giving. I've got a birthday coming up. Look, I want you to give to WBI. The birthday present for me is telling WBI that you're donating in the name of my show, Resistance Radio with John Cain and Regan DeLoggins. That's the gift. The gift to me is letting them know that you listen to the station and you to the show, and that you want to demonstrate with your gift, with your donation to WBI, how much you value this program. That's the gift. So it's a gift to WBI, and the gift to me is letting them know that you listen to this program. So, again, you can go online. You can go to give2wbai.org. That's G-I-V-E, the number 2, wbai.org. Or, like I said, go to the pledge line, 516-620-3602. So anyway, I think it's really, really important, because we have a lot of things to fight. You know, so yeah, I'm putting a significant amount of time into the mascot issue, so I can finally stop another generation of kids being indoctrinated in this idea that, you know, that's what we are. Because what we are, we're pipeline resistors. We are people fighting for land back. We are people defending our missing and murdered indigenous women, or fighting, the intergenerational trauma caused by residential schools. That's who we are. And look, we're not weakened by mascots. We are empowered to resist it. You know, I got into a whole discussion about what cancel culture means, because that's the right is now using, oh yeah, everybody's all into this cancel culture. You know what? Cancel culture is a good thing, because I don't think the right understands what it means. And because the way they use it, it misrepresents what it means. Cancel culture isn't about canceling culture. Cancel culture is about developing and creating a culture where you can cancel the liars and the lies and the false narratives. Where you can take people like, whether it's Harvey Weinstein, you know, or any of these guys out of your life. Me Too movement, yeah, that's part of cancel culture. Taking down, Confederate statues or Columbus statues or that racist statue in front of the Museum of Natural History. Yeah, I'll own that cancel culture. Why? Because it's they're lies. That statue is a lie. In what world would Teddy Roosevelt have had a naked black man and a near naked Native man carrying his weapons for him, while he strode his horse? I mean, come on. It's a lie, and it's racist. It's subservient. It expresses dominance and white supremacy. All of that stuff. So yeah, get rid of it. Get rid of your Columbus statues, the false narratives that you created there. Why? Because it's a lie. So me, I'm not just fine with cancel culture. I support cancel culture because I want to be empowered enough to correct the false narratives, and that includes mascots. That includes much of this. It includes the move for social justice. Because social justice is required because of the false narratives, because of the lie, because of white supremacy. That's the chore. That is what we do. All right, look, I got a little bit of time left. Let me give out the pledge line one more time, 516-620-3602. I don't know, Reggie, can we do a couple of calls?
We can do a couple of calls once they call.
Well, I'm going to put the number out, and then they're going to call. They better be calling the pledge line.
Well, you do that.
You better not call 212-209-2877 and wish me a happy birthday if you're not going to send in a donation to WBAI, okay? So let me just say it right now. 212-209-2877. Do not call that number to talk to me, or don't call that number and wish me a happy birthday. And it's coming up in a couple of days. Don't call a number unless you're going to give a gift to WBAI. How's that? I just sold myself out to WBAI. So the number is 212-209-2877. Look, give me a call. We can talk about Cleveland. We can talk about high school mascots. We can talk about some of this ugly history associated with November. Sorry, with December. Hey, look, let me also mention this COVID thing. Yesterday was record-breaking. Yesterday was record-breaking. 248,686 new cases in a single day. Broke a record. 3,538 new deaths in a single day. Broke a record. this is where we're at. I know everybody's trying to feel good about vaccines and that kind of stuff. And look, you know, by all means, be enthusiastic. But keep in mind, this thing is not going to turn the corner anytime soon. And why? Because we won't behave in a certain way. You know, before I went out to Cambridge Central School in Cambridge, New York, which is out near Saratoga, I got a COVID test before I went. Why? Because where I live, there are more cases out here in Western New York, you know, and not well, even on our territory here, than in the sleepy little town I was going home to. So I went and I got a COVID test, and I got the results back before I went to that board meeting. Look, there were some haters out there who said, oh, they should never let that guy come here. He's coming from a red zone. No, I wasn't coming from a red zone. But I was coming from an area that I wanted to make sure that I was not carrying the disease with me as I went back east. These are behaviors that, look, maybe it isn't easy for everybody to get a test. But there are certain things that if you're going to do something that involves meeting people that you don't know, or even if they people you do know, if you're going to be in a shared space, then do what you can to protect them and to protect yourself. Wear a mask. You know, keep your distance. I went out there, didn't visit with anybody, didn't sit next to anybody. They had social distancing inside the gymnasium. I gave my statement, cleaned up the podium before. I mean, it was cleaned up before I spoke, cleaned up after I spoke, and then I left. 6-hour drive each way to do what I think to fulfill a responsibility that I have. But I wasn't irresponsible about doing it. So I just got to mention that COVID stuff. All right, Reggie, we got anybody on the lines?
Oh, yeah, we got a bunch of calls.
All right, let's do it. Well, let's bang out a few before we run out of time. Go ahead. Caller, you up first. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, happy birthday, John. This is George from New Jersey. How are you?
I'm going to assume you made a donation. You right? You made a donation to the station?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. All right. I'll accept it. Thank you. What's there in your mind?
I wanted to know if you read the book Mayflower by Nathaniel Philbrick.
No, I haven't.
It talks about when we came to this, when the pilgrims came to the land, and that there were so few Indians because of the flu that it killed off the Indians before we even got here. I guess it came up from Jamesburg. But very interesting how we bought the land from the Indians. You know, and they just didn't get it. They didn't get that we were a people that conquered land and held land, and the Indians were a traveling band that followed the food, followed the sea.
No. I don't know where you're learning this stuff, but no, Native people were not nomads. We weren't wanderingly, aimlessly chasing buffalo. We had villages. We had permanent residents. We may have had seasonal addresses. We may have, been in one area that the season permitted us, better food and lifestyle. But no, we weren't nomads. And the idea that land was bought, let's call it what it was. And it wasn't even conquest. It was fraud. It was swindling. And this flu wasn't just generic. The spreading of disease was intentional. Lord, the namesake of Amherst, Massachusetts, and actually there's an Amherst out here in Western New York, Lord Jeffrey Amherst, he actually recommended distributing not just the flu, but smallpox blankets. So yeah, it's really nice to kind of characterize this as just an accident. It's really unfortunate. Those poor Native people, they had such weakened immune systems. They weren't hardy like us white folks. No, that's not true. But whatever. There's always a kind of a spin there. But all right, now, Reggie, go ahead. Let's go next call. Caller, you're up next. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, this is Peter from Tampa.
Well, there's Peter. How you doing, Peter? Good to hear from you.
I'm doing good. You covered so much today. It's going to take me a while to be able to tell little girls, watch The Wizard of Oz, but don't know about his past. You know, it goes to show you how pernicious that someone could have those thoughts, not only have those thoughts, publish them, and think he's the good guy. It's just so disgusting.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a backhanded compliment. But, it also should be noted that the wonderful Wizard of Oz is a bit of a political parody, and I don't know that everybody understands it. Judy Garland singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow, notwithstanding, the story, the Tin Man represented industrialization, the Scarecrow represented farmers, the witch and the flying monkeys, that represented Native people, the fear of wilderness. We were the evil that needed to be conquered. And that's the way, that's the way. There are actually studies or college courses that actually break down the Wizard of Oz and have used it as a course study.
Yeah, I've heard of that. The East was the evil, like, bankers. The West were the good guys. The good witch of the West was the farmers. It really played up. Oh, and the big battle then, don't know if it was the gold standard. Should they go off the gold standard and have the silver standard? Originally, she didn't have ruby slippers. They were silver slippers. And so it was the gold yellow brick road.
Yeah, they had to play the politics, right?
It was the battle of the two.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, I heard something in the news, and I haven't been able to Google it and find it. Did you hear about the destruction of something in western New Mexico, an Indian? It was an artifact?
Oh, there's been some artwork, you know, the ancient artwork that that people have vandalized and destroyed. That might be what you're talking about. So, yeah, some of these...
People wanted to. It's like it's horrible. Like it reminded me of what happened in Western Australia when they destroyed the Aboriginal stuff. And here's this guy as a CEO of a corporation. What? And I think, what do you want? You're looking for iron. You're destructing something that was 40,000 years old. Your iron. I mean, it's like I don't care if you're a CEO. You're a subhuman if you don't know the value. Something that's 40,000 years old.
Well, and the issue with a lot of this stuff, especially this ancient stuff, is it they become the Mythbusters, right? Because, you know, there have been historians and archaeologists and anthropologists that have suggested that Native people only got here 15,000 years ago. And, of course, that window has been broken many times over. So there's always this constant battle to somehow compartmentalize that we merely got here before the white people, and that we are somehow not as connected to the land as our history and culture would suggest. And of course, when you find these ancient artifacts or artwork or evidence of civilization, it kind of busts their own myths.
Like, all right. What a spoiled brat. Why don't we call it what it is?
Yeah, it's vandalism. All right, Peter. Well, thank you so much for the call. It's always great to hear from you. I'm glad you catch us on the internet and participate in the program. Let's we'll try to get at least another caller in here. Let's see what we can do.
This is the last call. I think this is going to be the last call, John.
All right, let's go ahead and do it. Caller, you're up next. What's your name?
Here we go.
Where are you calling from?
Sandra from Manhattan. Hi.
Hi, Sandra. Nice to hear from you.
Thank you. I have a question. How do indigenous people feel about the military using indigenous names and symbols, such as, Tomahawk, cruise missile, and Apache helicopter, and yelling out Geronimo, when they're dumping out a plane?
Well, frankly, I hate it. Not only do I hate being utilized in that way, but... In fact, ironically, when I went out to Cambridge, one of the people who was speaking, in favor of the mascots, brought that up. Said, well, see, these names are honored. They're honored by the military. Let's be clear. The military actually calls the other side of the enemy lines, they call it Indian country. That's an expression, and I'm sure there's some listeners who are going to say, oh, yeah, that's right. In fact, Michael G said, yeah, that's right. That's absolutely. They would refer to... the enemy lines as Indian country. So that's how we're viewed. And I remind people that when Osama bin Laden was killed, what you heard when you were listening in to Obama live as they were getting the information on this thing with their joint chiefs of staff and everything else, it was like Geronimo E-K-I-A. The code name for killing Osama bin Laden was Geronimo, enemy killed in action. So that's how the military. So no, I don't like being used by the military in any way, shape, or form. I also don't like being used by the military the way they used our people in our language. Look, they've been trying to wipe out our language for hundreds of years. And then all of a sudden they decide they can militarize it and turn it into their codes so they can be better soldiers. And what people don't realize is that the code talkers were not just, they were expendable. Even though what they had was something that was valuable, they actually had somebody who would watch them. They would have a soldier whose job it was to kill them if it looked like they would fall into enemy hands. If a code talker were to be captured, he would have to be shot and killed by a fellow soldier to make sure that the enemy, the Japanese in particular, would not be able to take that native person and try to get the code out of him. So this is the relationship with military that Native people have.
Interesting. Thank you so very much. I always wondered about that.
Well, thank you for calling, and thanks for the question. Well, like I said, we are off next week. I do have to, again, ask as we go off air here, go to the pledge line. Go to 516-620-3602, 516-620-3602 to make a pledge of any size. Become a WBA buddy. Let them know you're doing it in the name of Resistance Radio. You can even tell them that you said happy birthday when you do that. But you can go online. You can go to give2wbai.org. That's G-I-V-E, the number two.
From you, John.
Well, I can only do this once a year, right?
Do that.
I'll find another way to panhandle next time. But look, this is exactly what I'm doing. I'm asking you, the listeners, to make a donation to the radio station. If it makes you feel better, tie it to my birthday, then I have no shame. I have no shame here. So I want to thank you. I want to thank you guys for listening. I want to thank you for joining us on a weekly basis, and I want to thank you for participating with your calls and your comments on Facebook and that kind of thing. So I want to thank you very much. You can go to my website, which is letstalknative.com. You can go to my YouTube channel, which is Let's Talk Native TV. And you can search our podcast and hear these shows and the shows that I do back here at Let's Talk Native with John Cain podcast. We'll see you in a couple weeks. This is John Cain for John Cain and Regan DeLoggins and Resistance Radio. Thank you. Yahweh.